Welcome to TSCRA Talk, a podcast by Texas and Southwestern Cattle Raisers Association. I'm your host, Kristen Brown. Joining me today are Kent and Shannon Rollins. Known for his chuck wagon cooking, Kent has cooked for cowboys across the U.S. and has made numerous TV appearances on shows including Throwdown with Bobby Flay, Chopped Grillmasters, and NBC's Food Fighters. Kent and Shannon continue to deliver the history and heritage of the cowboy way of life to the world through their YouTube channel and cookbook. Kent and Shannon, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for being with us today.
Oh, it is our pleasure, ma'am. We are honored to talk about beef, and anytime we get the chance.
Well, that's exciting. And to kick us off today, I want to understand, Kent, we're going to start with you. Tell us about your background and your experience growing up that cultivated a love for ranching and the cattle industry.
We were raised down south of Hollis, pretty close to the Red River, and we had a small cow-calf operation, farm and ranch both, but we worked a lot of cattle for the neighbors. Everybody would neighbor up. There was never a change of money. It was always just people helping each other out, and met some of the greatest cowboys in the world when I was 9, 10 years old, people that I thought stood as tall as giant oak trees. They were good men, stewards of the land, love God, and they love some beef just like the rest of us do. But my mother got me in the kitchen at an early age, and I was able to know that cooking really has nothing to do with a recipe at times. It has to do with what you can do with it and how you can make it to feed a crew or a household. And she taught me that a lot of love goes into cooking.
Well, that's neat. That's very special. And Shannon, tell us about your background.
So I came from a town in northeastern Nevada, Elko, and I wasn't directly involved in any type of ranching. Of course, that whole area is very rich in ranch history, so I was familiar with it. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until I started cooking with Kent on working ranches that I really got immersed in that culture, and then really even cooking in general, because I did not cook at all. And so going from that to full on in the fire, Dutch oven cooking, grilling, no electricity or running water, it was interesting.
Well, I bet so. I bet so. Because it's different than having the fully stocked kitchen with running water and electricity, like you just said. So, and Kent, from what you said, it sounds like there's an art to cooking, especially this kind of cooking. So tell us a little bit more. Let's go into that a little bit about more on what sparked your interest in specifically this outdoor cooking and around the chuck wagon.
You know, I had the opportunity in 1981 to go guide elk hunters in the Gila wilderness. My uncle was a guide out there, and he told me, he said, I could sure use some help this season and the next season and the next season. But he said, really, I know you know how to guide a hunter. And he said, I figure you know how to cook. I figure your mother taught you. But nobody had ever taught me to bake in a Dutch oven. And it's totally different at, you know, altitude. And we's base camp was about 8,200 foot. So you learn a lot real quick. Biscuits won't rise, beans wouldn't cook. And I didn't know what was going on, but it's the way I learned to cook in a Dutch oven was always just trial and error. And you figured things out. And I did about 4 seasons back and forth out there and learned how to master elevation, but got out of there and I got to thinking, you know, I would love to cook for cowboys. You know, I've worked on some ranches. I've eat off some old chuck wagon cooks many years ago, but I think I'm going to buy a wagon and just go to cooking for ranches. And it really started probably about 92, I reckon. And we went to cook on some ranches, and at the time, you know, you was making $40 a day. Cook always gets paid twice what the cowboys did, because so cowboys making 20. Time you put in 18, 19 hours a day, you didn't actually win the lottery, but you thought you did after you stayed 3 weeks somewhere and you got a check. So cowboy circle really is pretty tight from south to north. Word spread really quick, and I could cook on a ranch about 9 months out of the year if I wanted. And I think one of the busiest times I ever had catering and cooking on ranches both was about 240 days on the road, and a lot of them was in a teepee on a ranch.
Wow. And so I anticipate all across the U.S. or have you been in a certain area?
Well, there was some in Texas, some in Oklahoma, Kansas,
New Mexico, Wyoming, Colorado,
Nebraska. So It's been a little everywhere, some in Arizona, but it's one of them deals to where if you're a good cook, it really pays dividends for you to hire a good cook when you're feeding cowboys because they're going to work better. We've had a lot of the same people that we'd see, you know, for years. I'd meet people and they might be on another ranch because a lot of them were like day workers and they'd show up at different places. And it was always like a family reunion. And you got to see some of the best country in the world. You know, you'd be in the middle of 290,000 acres and that's what God created. And it is a beautiful place.
Well, that's so neat. Very neat to hear. Tell us about starting to do some of the cooking competitions and then how that has led to going all the way to being on some national television programs.
We did a deal long, long time ago in 95, I think, for QVC. I didn't know who they was, but they were featuring 50 states in 50 weeks is the way they put it. That was the first TV that I'd done of any major size. And right after that, the Food Network called and we did a deal for Al Roker, for Roker on the Road. And then we did a throwdown with Bobby Flay. I think the competition that really sort of launched it all. And we'd got a call when me and Shan was living down to Byers, Texas, said, "Hey, we'd love for you to come be on Chop Grill Masters. I'll be over an open fire." And I didn't have no idea what the show Chopped was or anything about it. And Shan pulled up an episode on the computer and we watched it. And I said, "Man, them people got a lot of crazy groceries." We ended up doing it, come in second out of 16. It sort of really helped kickstart a lot of things, especially with the first cookbook that we had and opened up the door. And we've done Chopped Redemption in New York City. I beat Bobby Flay, CBS Sunday Morning, Food Fighters, Cutthroat Kitchen.
You know, and I always wondered, because Kent wasn't classically trained as a chef and don't work in a traditional kitchen. And I always wondered why he did so well on these competitions. And I realized it was because these are all situations where you have to be really quick acting, think on your feet, and have an XYZ plan. And probably not use the ingredients that you were initially going to use. And that's exactly how it is sometimes when we're out cooking on these ranches, because there's no grocery store. It could be 90 miles away. And when you don't have the right supplies or the cowboys come in early and your meat's frozen, you always have to have all these different plans and you just have to make it happen because no one's going to come in and save you and feed these guys. And so I think that's why Kent did so well, is he just was really could act on his feet quickly and adapt so well.
Well, I love that. And it does make sense because life on the ranch is unpredictable and lots of moving parts and lots of things can change. So, and I bet they loved the authenticity that you brought to the shows for the viewers. I'm sure everybody just loved that authenticity of just a real cowboy.
I think so. And, you know, like we said before, Kent's not a traditional chef. So it was interesting for people to see that type of cooking and really to maybe even learn that that still exists, that there's still cowboys out there and there's still a chuck wagon on these, you know, remote ranches feeding people. And so it was almost a little bit of a history lesson that Kent can convey as well.
Yes. I want to hear about what y'all do now. Do you still go out and do cooking on the ranches? And then also talk about your YouTube channel and how you're really bringing this history and heritage and education to people all over.
We still do limited ranch cooking, spring, sometimes fall. But what had happened is about a year before COVID hit, probably 90% of our business was catering. So we were on the road constantly. It was really hard work because you're hauling the wagon. Everything we have is hot and heavy. It's cast iron. You're driving 500 miles. And so I told Kent, I said, we've got to find an easier way to do this. And it was probably maybe 8 years ago, we had really started focusing on YouTube because Kent had always wanted to do food TV. And we had been approached a lot by different food shows for him to have his own show. But the problem was somebody sitting in a desk in New York City who's a producer doesn't really understand what an authentic cowboy is. And so all these show ideas were very different. It was more reality than it was real. And so we said no to every show because it just wasn't authentic. But then, you know, as we started watching our YouTube grow, I told Kent, I said, I think we really need to focus on this YouTube because it's our own content. We can say whatever we want. We can cook whatever we want. We can interact with our fans more so than any cable show. And so that's when YouTube started really taking off. And then thank God we did transition more online because when COVID hit, had we not done that, our business would have been wiped out because we couldn't have gone and cooked for people in person. And COVID actually blew up our YouTube channel because everybody was staying home. And we found a lot of people, especially young families, love to cook. But rather than watching through the traditional competition style show that's been really popular, we found people really turning more to YouTube because they wanted to learn. They wanted to learn different aspects of cooking and especially outdoor type of cooking during COVID. That was perfect. So that's when we really started to see a shift in our business and it really grow.
Well, that's really exciting. And I have to tell our listeners, if they haven't gotten on and watched some of your videos, I highly recommend it. I think it's also fun to see the unpredictability of it. You've had a few unexpected guests on your show. Tell us about the time the snake came up. And it maybe it happened more than once, but I know for sure at least once.
Well, you know, I've always told people I've cooked about everything that could either walk through camp, crawl through camp, or fly through camp. And, you know, I've had a rattlesnake in camp a lot of times, sometimes in the dark, and we just wait for him to leave. But if those that ever came in the light, they made hors d'oeuvres later. But we were shooting a video down close to the river and some really old snaky country, but it was in December. So you wouldn't really think about a snake, but we'd had five or six pretty warm days in December. And I didn't even know he was there. And Shan said, "There is a snake." And I said, "Where?" He was just sitting right there beside us. But we've had them crawl through, you know, camp to warm up. We welcome them in, but they don't leave in the same capacity.
Oh, I love it. So funny. So funny. Always ready for anything. Now, let's talk about beef. Our listeners, cattlemen and landowners, we love to hear about people loving beef. And I anticipate that beef is a common staple at the chuck wagon for you. And so just tell us a little bit about preparing beef, maybe some of your most popular beef recipes, some of the recipes that people have loved. And then do you have a favorite cut of beef to cook with?
We make a menu when we go to a ranch. I've been doing it forever. Usually add about 3 days to a menu because you never know what Mother Nature's going to do. She may have it where you have to stay 2 or 3 days late. We always start out the deal. Usually it's traditionally known on a ranch that you set up camp on a Sunday afternoon. Cowboys will come in and help you set up. Works don't start till Monday morning. We'll feed supper on Sunday night, and the first night in is always steak night. I love to see their faces. The ones that had been around me for years, they knew what was happening. They knew it was going to be steak night. But for some of those new ones or those younger generation that had ventured along, when you could lay a 22-ounce bone-in ribeye out there on the, just come off the grill, them fellas was proud of it. There was always one meal that they always asked for every time at lunch, really two. That's chicken fried steak and gravy and mashed potatoes. But the other one was really our baked bean casserole. It is something that we've put together recipes in one of the cookbooks, but it's really simple with ground beef and some pork and beans and some good dried chilies and stuff like that that go in it. But
I think definitely your known for recipe would be the chicken fried steak.
Yeah.
Because that's what got you on Bobby Flay. And, you know, we've been traveling a bunch, and especially when the cookbooks come out, we do a lot of different meet and greets. And for the first cookbook, we were up in New York City and we were cooking for a culinary association. And it's amazing to think that chicken fried steak is a regional dish because so many people up there didn't understand. They still think it's chicken. They don't understand the batter. And they certainly don't understand the white gravy that goes on it.
No.
So it's it's kind of interesting to see different food cultures.
Yeah, some educating that goes along with it. I love that. I love that. What is something that you would like just the average Joe to know about beef and cooking with beef?
Well, I think so many times, especially if it's a steak of any size, you know, I always tell people there's two things that a lot of folks do wrong. First of all, they under-season, and then second of all, they overcook. When you cook a piece of beef really past medium, you're taking away a lot of the flavors, because when you have the correct amount of marbling in there, and as that cooks in there, and I always just call it beef butter, and it just mellows out and just runs through there. It's a very tender piece of beef. I always, most of the time, prepare steaks medium rare. You know, I have had a few that I've had to cook to medium, but the longer you cook a piece of steak, the more flavor that you're losing in it, really, because it begins to dry out just a little. So as we always told him, he done died once. Ain't no sense in killing him twice.
I love it.
It's important to kind of get outside your comfort zone when cooking beef, because so many times, what it's like ribeye New York hamburger. Like, that's kind of what people do in rotation. And there's so many cuts of beef, and especially the like ones that are not as well known, that could even be, you know, with beef prices, you know, people are trying to save, and you can find less expensive cuts, but still the full flavor. And one of my favorites is a baseball cut or a faux fillet. It's much cheaper than the fillet. It's smaller, but it has really great flavor. So there's a lot of different unique cuts that if you just like get outside your comfort zone, you can really start experimenting with them.
Well, that's awesome to know. And yeah, a great recommendation. And another thing, kind of same question, but shifting a little bit, is there anything that you would like for cattlemen and the ranchers and the people who are growing and producing the beef? Any messages that you have for them?
First of all, I'd say thank you. You know, I tell people a lot, I've raised beef from when it hit the ground to when it hit the plate. I've always told people, they would ask me sometimes, they'd say, hey, you know, there's people like you, you're a dying breed. There's not many cowboys left. And I said, oh, they're out there. You just can't see them from the road. Keep doing what you're doing. You're feeding America, but more than that, you're taking pride in what you do. You're showing America what really is life is all about. That is taking care of a family, taking care of cattle, taking care of land, and providing a living, and shipping it down the road and feeding somebody else.
Well, I love that. So I reached out to a couple of friends who follow you and have watched your videos and asked if they had any questions for you. So one that I got back was, what would you say is your most useful tool when you're cooking at the chuck wagon?
Most useful tool have to be cast iron. You know, if you're going something other than that, you better have a shovel, because it's hard to move coals barehanded. I've tried that a time or two, but cast iron is the most versatile thing there ever is, been around forever and ever, and it's the greatest thing to cook with.
Well, great. And so that's a perfect transition, because my next question is, what cast iron tips do you have? I know there are some common things, but tell us what some of your top tips are.
Number one is buy products made in the USA. There is a lot of cast iron that's not. And number two, if you can find them at the garage sales and estate sales, something like that, the old pieces of Griswolds and Wagners is the best cast iron that's ever been made to date, and probably forever. There is some new companies out there, and you can find Lodge and everything else, you know, but buy something you're going to be comfortable with. You know, there's some stuff that's heavier than others, but just pick it up, inspect it well, make sure it's made in the USA. Take care of it, season it, and clean it well, and you can pass it down from generation to generation.
And don't overcomplicate it. Yeah. I think people get really stressed out about cast iron, and then they don't use it because they've just worried themselves so much. Cast iron is really resilient. So unless it's cracked down the middle, you can bring it back, you can restore it, you can keep cooking in it. You're not going to hurt it. Maybe you season it wrong, no big deal. You can fix it and get back to cooking. So it's not as difficult, I think, as some people think.
Well, that's very good to know. I'm one of those that I'm a little bit intimidated by it. So I'm going to hop on your YouTube channel and go and watch the videos to get comfortable with it. And like you said, Kent, at the beginning, you know, experiment with it. It's an art. Just try it out. So I'm motivated to do a little more experimenting.
And we do have a full playlist on our YouTube on cast iron care and tips. So each video will walk you through. You can kind of search what topic you're looking for. It'll walk you through like how to season, how to clean, how to restore, how to get off rust. So you can look through that and kind of it'll walk you through whatever you're looking for.
Awesome. That's exactly what I need. So we've talked about YouTube. Tell us how we can find you on YouTube and then your website also.
It is just kentrollins.com. And then pretty much all of our socials, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook is just Cowboy Kent Rollins, and you can search it and we'll pop up.
Okay, perfect. Well, and y'all have cookbooks on the website. You have seasonings, barbecue sauce, some tools to use at the Chuck Wagon. And I have to tell our listeners to check out your smoky dip. So we live on a ranch, middle of nowhere. We're about 55 miles from the closest grocery store and gas station. And I keep your smoky dip on hand for those moments when a crew stays an extra day, you know, cattle work goes long, or people came over to Team Rope and it's supper time. And I'm like, hey, yes, y'all come on. And they think that I've been working so hard on this amazing dip. And so it's like my perfect little secret thing that I pull out of my pantry.
That's funny. In fact, we were just talking about the other day, we were shipping some of our products out for website orders. And we were talking about our dip is our probably most underappreciated product, but it is one of the best ones. And so,
yes, add to cart. When you go on an order, grab you five. Have some as backup. It's awesome. So highly recommend that to the listeners. Is there anything else that we haven't covered today that you'd like to share? Either one of you about your story, where y'all are today, and even where you're going into the future, what your vision is for the future.
We're going to keep on cooking. You know, we have a video that comes out every Wednesday on YouTube. We try to stay a little ahead most of the time. So we're either working on a recipe or cooking one nearly every week. And Shan does all the editing by herself. So it's a full-time deal, but we're going to keep on keeping on. It's something that we still love to do. Sure, we'll be glad when summer's gone by. We stood by a fire this morning when we filmed, and it's pretty miserable. It's still a great day above the grass, and we're going to keep cooking. I'm going to try to cater my own funeral.
Well, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, sounds like y'all make a great team. And again, I encourage our listeners to go check y'all out if they haven't already. And just thank you for sharing the message of the ranching world and the good news about beef.
Oh, thank you so much for having us.
Yes, thank you, ma'am, so much. And it's all about the beef.
Thanks for listening today. We invite you to be part of one of our ranch gatherings or virtual Ranching 101s. For a full list of ranch gathering locations, Ranching 101 topics, and more information about cattle raisers, visit tscra.org or email events@tscra.org.